Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host. We don't have our regular crew today. We've got Bo and Karen all together. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Wonderful. We've got Matt in studio, and we have a liberal arts summertime conversation today. What's the title, Bo?
Utopia Sucks.
That's right. We got Sucks in there because Tracy's not here. She's in Arizona on vacation. Cody's traveling today, so we said we're going to get it in there. But it's actually a great title because it really is what we want to say. Utopia Sucks. And so let me tell you where this liberal arts topic comes from. And Karen was with me when we heard this. So we were at a church conference these last few days. It's amazing to me when I travel, I go on vacation or go into a different kind of organization, and how many things come to me around organizational health. And there was a wonderful presentation given by a Catholic priest named Father Monsignor James Shea. He's the president of a college in North Dakota called University of Mary. And he did this talk, and he talked about a book called Utopia. Now, it was written by Thomas More, St. Thomas More. And if you don't know, if you don't know who he is, you can watch an amazing movie called A Man for All Seasons. He was the guy who was ultimately killed by Henry VIII because he wouldn't change his beliefs about the church. But anyway, he wrote a book in the 16th century called Utopia. And the purpose of the book, it was written as a satire. The word utopia had never been used before. He coined the word. And in Greek, it means nowhere. Utopia means nowhere. So he coined the word, wrote this book. It's a satire. The funny thing is, a lot of people today don't realize it's a satire and actually think he was advocating for creating a utopia. What he was trying to say was, there is no such thing, and it's very dangerous if we think there is. So what does this have to do with organizational health? That's what we're going to talk about today. There is no such thing as the perfect organization. You never arrive and say, yes, we are healthy, we are fine, it is all good. Life, organizations, society is messy because we're fallible human beings, and it's important that we understand that, and we're going to talk about it today.
Pat, the first thing that comes to mind for me is, if somebody has the standard in their mind that there's going to be this utopian organization that they work in, what ends up happening is they actually try to legislate it often. They try to make a bunch of rules to be able to over-enforce the thing that they think will make it perfect. And of course, what does that do? It makes it way worse. It never creates the idyllic scenario that they anticipated.
Yeah, and because this is a liberal arts conversation, I love that. That's what almost every dictator who ended up killing tons of people said they were trying to do, is to create a utopian society. And what they do is they have to do more egregious things until they start killing people in the name of, well, this will lead to a more utopian society. Almost every dictator in the 20th century who killed millions of people did so because they were trying to overrule human nature and create what they thought was a perfect world.
So what is the takeaway then? Is it, this isn't possible? Is it good enough is good enough? Is it don't try too hard? Or is it be gracious to yourself when your organization is not perfectly healthy?
I think that the message here is, do not, it's so dangerous to expect perfection, because it will lead to guilt, because you'll never get there. And this is true whether you're running a family or a business or a church or a school. If you really have your sights set on one day we will rid ourselves of all problems, you will be restless, you will be guilty, you will get frustrated, and you will self-attack and say, what is wrong with me for the rest of your life? And instead, if we embrace our humanity, our brokenness, which is, you know, and I don't want to get theological here, but we need to embrace the fact that we are imperfect and always will be imperfect this side of heaven, and accept that, and sometimes even celebrate that and say, wow, we are not perfect. We're always in need of help. And this seems very simple, but it's so important, because all of us are drawn to this concept of one day we'll all be perfect. And that's the recipe for misery, I think, in life.
There's no there. And we often convince ourselves as human beings that we're actually in charge, and we're not. And I organizational health is very much a journey, much like a marriage, and there really is no there there. So what do we do?
Well, one of the things we have to stop doing, Karen, and this is why the world, I think of social media and media in general is so painful, is, and it's why I hate those best places to work in America things, because we present our companies like it's perfect. And I hate when people, I don't like, we've talked about this before, Christmas cards where we write the letter about how your family is perfect. Because what we're doing is we're conveying to people that there is perfection, which really conveys to everybody that they're less than they should be. And we live in a world where everybody is kind of envious or feels like there's something wrong with them. And why do we have this desire or this need to erase all of our faults and present ourselves as perfect? It only leads to a reduction in everyone's level of happiness and success.
I'm thinking about sort of the metaphor of an all-inclusive resort. There is a time and a season to be able to go to one of those. I've been to one of those before. You rarely leave feeling like you thought you would feel. The advertising is the crystal blue water. Don't worry, you won't have to do any work. Everything will be provided for you. And 3 days in, if we're honest, you feel a little lethargic. You're ready for one of those excursions to go and do something. And I think the same thing can be applied like to work. We're not looking for a utopian place where none of this is ever hard. We were meant to be able to engage. And Pat, I actually think people get more dignity when they're in environments where they get to grow, not where it's just always perfect. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think struggle is part of life. And while we say, wouldn't it be great if life had no struggle, talk to a person who somehow creates, you talk to a person like a who has so much money that they don't have to work and they never have to do anything, they don't feel like it. These are people who are really, really unhappy. But getting back to organizations, I think, you know, I've had the blessing of working with so many different companies over the years, and some of them that are just fabulous. And the fabulous ones are messy, and they have problems, and they fail. And it's actually, the good thing is how you respond to that, and how you rally and love each other in the midst of difficulty. That is the best moment. And if you never had the problems, you would never have the joy of having to try to overcome them.
Yeah, and if you as a leader remove all of the problems, what you actually could do is rob the people around you of the joy that they'll experience of being able to respond to them themselves, of being able to grow up to the ability to be a resilient person who can handle when things aren't perfect, who learns how to be able to respond.
Gosh, something that just occurred to me, and that is that, you know, and as parents, we do this. And as leaders, we do this in our organizations. We don't want to ever have anything go wrong. And yet when something goes wrong, it might be on your team where people argue and they're a little bit tough on each other. And you think, oh no, I'm failing as a leader. Or you do something wrong for a customer. Well, every time you recover from something bad that happens, you get stronger. The customer that you make a mistake for and you make up for it, they're a more loyal customer. The relationship with a person that breaks down and you overcome that, you have a stronger relationship than you had before. And a bone breaks, it heals stronger. Your skin gets cut, the scar is stronger. God made us to heal, not to avoid the need for healing. And in our organizations, if we prevent problems, we're going to end up creating really unnatural ones. So it's so ironic that our quest for perfection drives us into a really ugly imperfection rather than a natural one.
Isn't it funny how we as leaders or parents feel this need to always rescue? Like, where does that come from, I wonder?
I think it comes from the fear of suffering, Karen.
Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. Sparing other people from suffering, like our kids, for example.
Yeah. I think it also comes from pride. I know that the notion of being the best boss ever and somebody saying, oh, what a great team. There's a, oh, I want to give that to people, but I also want to be seen as that, if I'm being totally honest. And the messiness, I don't believe that the messiness is always going to reflect well on me.
Yeah, I think that's why I don't like the best places to work in America. And there's some great companies that don't even apply for that. Because it's like, do I do this because I want to be seen that way? And if you look at it, there's a criteria. And I know that companies, I know this, they go through the criteria and they try to manufacture it so they can win it because it's a marketing tool. rather than just being a great place to work and letting that reward be itself. So I think you're right. It's pride. It's wanting to project perfection. It's wanting to have the Christmas card that looks like we're perfect when behind the scenes, we all know the reality. And so embracing that reality is much better.
Absolutely. Because you're depriving other people of growth, which is what suffering leads to oftentimes, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
I think about the word artificial, that it can appear from the outside like everything's put together, but there's actually not strength underneath it. I heard this story recently of somebody who was at the gym with a bunch of friends, and they were seeing who could bench press the most weight. And this guy who comes in with these massive muscles was like, "Oh, I can do that," and actually tore a muscle while he was doing that. And it was like, "Well, you had show muscles." I don't know if that's a real thing. I don't have show muscles. I don't have any kind of muscles. But the like the idea that, oh, it looks like you're really, really strong, but you actually can't handle it. And I'd rather be part of an organization that can recover when we bleed towards unhealth, right? Like that can recover when we don't trust each other and can be resilient when there wasn't clarity.
Yeah, show muscles. Let me remember this because I can remember this when I was in college. If you really want to look good, you do lower weights and more reps. So it's like Cody says, curls for the girls, you know? But if you want to be strong, you can lift more weight, but that doesn't necessarily build up your muscle mass. Your strength. So yeah. If you're doing it for looks, you do one way. If you're doing it for real strength, you do it another way. I know that because there was a time in my life where I was like, I don't care how strong I am. I don't lift that many things, but I'd like to look like I was. again, getting to pride. You know, I remember working with Southwest Airlines. We worked with them for years. And of course, they had an incredible culture, you know, and still do in many ways, you know, but they went through this horrible situation this past Christmas. And we did a podcast about it. That will either strengthen their culture because they'll embrace it and they'll double down on what made them great, fix the problems and get better. Or they will be so afraid of making a mistake going forward that it will deteriorate their culture. And I use them as an example because everybody knows who they are. Nobody gets out of this life unscathed, and we shouldn't want to. And so are they going to go back and become a messy culture again? Or are they going to do everything they can to prevent any messiness and become like every other company? It's such an interesting challenge.
I'm thinking about when you said messy, it made me think about this, Pat, that utopia might be appealing from the outside. But if you get into a utopian environment and you know that you're a mess, very quickly you will feel like you are an imposter and you don't fit in. Whereas if you're in a messy culture where things aren't imperfect and you're able to be vulnerable and be imperfect, oh, you're going to fit in there. You resonate
yes,
with that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I want to do business with a company that will make a mistake and admit it, not one that won't do anything because they're afraid of making a mistake. And I want to be friends with people that are real. And I want to have a relationship with somebody who's vulnerable enough to make a mistake and recover, but not one that's so afraid to be intimate because they're afraid they're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true in life, it's true in families, but it's true in organizations. Embrace your messiness. One of the things that Monsignor Shea said was, we have to quit fearing our poverty. And we were all like, what? He goes, our poverty, our need, our dependency on others and on God is something we need to lean into. And when we are afraid to admit we need others, when we are afraid to admit that we might have faults, we end up doing much worse things. So I don't know we have to say a lot more about it than that. I think that's what we're here to talk about today is utopia is not something to aspire to. We're not perfect. We never will be. All right? Sound good?
That sounds great. I love it.
Bo, love it. You have a unpaid advertising for us today, don't you?
I do, but before I do the unpaid ad, it occurs to me that some of our listeners who are listening to the At the Table podcast don't listen to our Six Types of Working Genius podcast, and you should check it out. If you haven't checked out the Working Genius podcast recently, we have great, fun conversations like this all centered around the six types of working genius. So check it out, Matt. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And it is the second day of summer as we're recording this, and the unpaid ad today is for popsicles. Popsicles in the summertime are unbeatable. I have a favorite type of popsicle. I love popsicles. Pat, your thoughts on popsicles?
Well, I'm going to ask you, how do you define a popsicle? I think this is very important. We need to be clear about this. Is it just the kind with the wooden stick in it? It is. Okay.
I don't think that an ice cream bar with a wooden stick in it counts as a popsicle. A popsicle is typically fruit flavored,
yum,
frozen treat with a wooden stick in it. An Otter Pop?
Not so much.
Really? I like Otter Pops more than popsicles. Hmm. I think their sugar content is probably higher. That's probably why.
I'm sure that it is.
Yes. What is your favorite kind of popsicle?
We love Melona popsicles. We get them at Costco and they are melon flavored. So there's like the green melon, honeydew. I guess there's only one melon flavored, mango and coconut. And they are amazing.
Okay. So this is the upscale popsicles of the future, of the, you know, like not the popsicles of our childhood. Cause you know where you got popsicles when we were kids? The ice cream truck.
Ice cream truck.
Not me. We were too cheap for that. My mom would make them out of orange juice and throw them in those plastic things. And that is the opposite of utopia, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'd say the Melona popsicle is pretty close to utopia. It's pretty fantastic.
What about the USA rocket ones? You know, the red, white, and blue, and they look like a rocket?
Yeah. No,
I'm going to say no. Hard pass on those. Hard pass on the SpongeBob SquarePants popsicles. But I'm so happy for you that you like them. I'd rather eat a celery popsicle, okay, than do that.
We are no longer anti-celery here. Everybody has their own opinion. I will say, Bo, a popsicle is a great thing. I will also say that listening to the music on the ice cream truck was half the joy. Was half the running after the ice cream truck.
Huh.
So go out and have a popsicle today. It is the first day of summer. Feels like summer's been here for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but truthfully, it started just yesterday or the day before.
Woo-hoo.
All right. Thanks for joining us on this liberal arts summertime podcast of At the Table. We love having people listen. We love hearing from you. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.